Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Ho, ho, ho. All right. Hey, everyone. I'm keeping it. Hey, everyone. It's the Macko and Cos podcast. And this one will have decidedly less sports. It's a Christmas edition that we are recording on Christmas Eve week, or maybe December 22nd. It's Monday still. Hey, Bob.
I'm still drunk from the last pod. So I did have just one drink, so you can decide for yourself when we probably recorded this.
Bob, you had barely, I'd say under 100 milliliters of an 11.5% cava, and you're saying you already feel, you feel like you got a bit of a buzz. That's crazy.
Look at my eyes.
Mm-hmm. You drunken madman.
Went to the washroom to freshen up. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm squinting? And I look happy and tired at the same time.
You had, I think, maybe 3 ounces, no more than 4 ounces of cava.
Well, then I guess I'm just good at it.
All right. So we are doing a Christmas Eve edition of the show. Let's start here. What is the fish you will be serving for Christmas Eve? No meat, doing the whole fish dinner thing. What is the fish?
We have everybody over, and we actually do lobster.
This is
the Makowitz Pacheca family tradition.
Yeah.
Sandra and I have all the family come over, and you would be able to come over too if you wanted, but I know you...
We're in St. Catharines.
Right now, you're somewhere else. I'm not even talking to you here, Matt.
No. I'm the ghost of Christmas, the Christmas future. Actually, I don't want to be the ghost of Christmas future. That guy, real bring down.
Oh, that's the truth. We do lobsters.
You do lobsters. Ooh la la.
We used to do lobsters and crab's legs, but I don't know if you've been to the market lately.
Crab's legs? They are expensive.
So expensive.
Holy shit.
It's about $100 for a couple crab's
legs. Yeah, it's stupid. So... the drawn butter will be prepared?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we're also doing Portuguese fish. Mm-hmm. We're doing like a Portuguese fish dish. So it'll be Portuguese with shredded potato. And also I'll probably do some potato pancakes and serve them with sour cream and lox. So good.
I cannot recommend this enough. Please. And I'll send you some recommendations. If I did my top five best food and wine pairings.
Okay.
I'm
listening.
In that top five, just at least a slightly oaky Chardonnay. Oh my God, Chardonnay and lobster with the butter. It is one of the best combinations. Well, you can't go wrong.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And even though you're not here right now talking to me right in front of me, I'm not looking you right in the eyes, Matt.
That's right.
You're in St. Catharines because it's Christmas Eve. What are you guys doing tonight?
On Christmas Eve, we will be at Amy's aunt and uncle.
You mean right now? Or...
right now, I am at Amy's aunt and uncle. Oh, okay. Here's the best part. And like she, incredible cook, incredible in terms of just as a host.
Mm-hmm.
And they live right by the the Bruce Trail. So like you got the woods and you're near vineyards. I can hear the cannons going off that are scaring birds away. And they got a hot tub. There's going to be Christmas Eve hot tubbing. And there's deer as well. There's deer. We'll see deer. Oh, it's a beautiful pastoral thing.
So one of the things I love about Christmas
is hot tubs.
Well, yes, in a way, because most religious holidays are kind of downers. They're usually about how much you sin or all the things that you need to get better at. But Christmas is just like Jesus is born for religious people. Let's party.
Yeah, exactly.
The idea is let's give gifts and be happy, comfort, merriness. Like the Catholics, like the Christians in general, you don't go, that's a merry bunch. God, they just love to chill and not judge and everybody get together and have fun. Wear your PJs because none of it matters. It's all good. The Christians are not like, we're not an it's all good kind of folk.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Like, you know what? I'll go this far. None of it's good, Matt. None of it's good.
There's some Debbie Downerness in it.
Except one day a year.
That's right.
One day a year when everyone goes, you know what? Let's eat and it's not gluttony.
Exactly. Oh, it's that one time of year, you know, where you can tell people.
It's the most wonderful time of year, Matt.
It is indeed, Bobby.
Well, you know, I've got a few things here for top fives, and I don't know if you do, but let's talk Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a top five Christmas movie list?
Got it right here.
Of course you do. So here's what I suggest. I read mine, you read yours, and then we decide which ones we want to discuss, because for sure we're going to have overlap. So we might want to pick ones that overlap, or maybe you pick one or I do that is surprising and we single that out.
All right,
So why don't
you do it?
you go first.
Okay, I'm going to go from 5 to 1 because it's
Because
Christmas.
that's called a countdown.
That is called a countdown. Number 5, Fred Claus.
Oh.
Number 5, Fred Claus.
Oh.
Paul Giamatti, 2-time Oscar winner Kevin Spacey. We're talking about acting. Kathy Bates, Oscar winner. Vince Vaughn, excellent, excellent actor when he wants to be and very funny. So number 5, Fred Claus. Number
Put a pin in that. I want to tell you my
okay.
Paul Giamatti story.
Okay. Oh, okay. Number 4, Polar Express. Number 3, Muppet Christmas, 2-time Oscar winner Michael Caine. Number 2, Die Hard. And coming in at number 1, you want the moon, Mary? Number 1, It's a Wonderful Life.
Buffalo Girls, won't you come
Come out
out
tonight.
tonight?
Won't you come out tonight?
Okay, so some variants, some not. I'll read mine and then we'll come back and talk about Paul Giamatti. Number 5, not technically a Christmas movie, but it is a tradition to always do a marathon of these movies on Christmas, and that's The Lord of the Rings, the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings. Because you're at home, and not everybody loves basketball. There's usually two TVs going, one's for the kids, one for the adults, and the adults are watching basketball, and the kids all go and watch Lord of the Rings. Okay, that's a bit of a cheat, though.
It is.
Number 4, A Christmas Carol, Alistair Sim,
Okay, Alistair version.
1951, and all
Right.
that. I got something I want to talk about with that. A hot take that will blow your mind.
All right.
Number 3, Trading Places.
Excellent.
Trading Places, one of the least appreciated Christmas movies. Think about Louis eating the salmon, getting caught in his
I
beard.
was about to say there's never been just a worse treatment. I was going to make a joke about those movies about when the dolphins are all getting murdered and the whales are getting murdered. And I'm thinking that this version was even more cruel to fish, but I won't do that.
Number 2, Die Hard, and number 1, It's a Wonderful Life.
We got the same number two
We
and
have
number
the same number one
one.
and two.
Hey.
Those guys are great. Okay, Paul Giamatti, Fred
Okay.
Claus. Not a huge fan of the movie, but I was at a party once. It was a festival of festival parties, like the TIFF, and Paul Giamatti was there, and I was drunk.
Oh
Oh
no.
my God, I was drunk. And someone said, "Hey, I
Hold on,
thought
did you have a full glass of cava?
you." I may have had 3 or 4. No, honestly, Matt, I was really drunk.
Yep.
And I met Paul Giamatti, who was not. And I was still aware that he was totally sober. And I was trying to have a conversation with this guy whom I admire so much. And he's being so nice to me. And I'm just thinking, this poor bastard has to talk to me right now. And I'm not fit for human consumption.
Oh, and like, and in your mind, you're like, keep it together, Bob. Keep it together. Now nod your head like a human. Yes, I agree with you right
It
now.
was exactly this. Like, so your dad is baseball guy, right?
Yeah, and he died tragically young. I can't do a Paul Giamatti one, but listen, I would say rewatch Fred.
Holdovers.
Well, the holdover is.
No, that was actually on my almost made it list. I haven't seen it enough times to put it there, but when I saw it, I really liked it.
We rewatched it a couple of weeks
Does
ago.
it hold up?
Not only does it hold up, it's actually better the second time than the first time.
Cool.
Yeah, so
Okay.
I think the holdovers will become one of those movies. I would just say, like, you see the title and you see the poster, but Fred Claus actually has a lot of heart. And there is this one scene with Paul Giamatti and Kevin Spacey just going back and forth, and it's a fucking masterclass of acting.
I can't watch Kevin Spacey anymore, though.
Listen,
It's just too creepy, man.
well, you
It's
know
too
the.
creepy.
I mean, I can't argue with you. I can separate art from artists and all that shit. And by the way,
What?
those who can't, fine. If you can't listen to Michael Jackson, totally get it. However you approach art is fine.
Roman Polanski is behind the camera. So when I see a Roman Polanski movie, it's not like I have to look at him. And when I do
Right.
look at him, like he's briefly in Chinatown, he plays a sleazy thug.
Tough role for him.
Really
Really,
strange.
he really went full Bertolt Brecht to get in a character. Theater.
Let's talk about A Christmas Carol because you've got it with the Muppets and I've got it old black and white with Alistair Sim, but that's the Christmas story, right?
It's the one we grew up with.
No, but when you look at the whole arc of Christmas stories told over the last 250 years or however long, that is the archetype, I think. When it's sort of like if I say name a punk band, people would say the Sex Pistols.
Right.
Like if I said name a classic Christmas movie, people go, "Oh, A Christmas Carol."
I have to rewatch it. It's been a couple. I am a big fan of
The
it.
old one.
The old, yeah, no, the old one. I remember the one time when you see the skeleton near the end. I remember being as a kid getting scared. I'm like, oh, here comes the skeleton.
Well, it's interesting because when Dickens wrote it, seems weird to tell a ghost story on Christmas Eve, but the Victorians actually told ghost stories on Christmas Eve. That was a tradition that was very common in most homes. And here's my hot take, and it's courtesy of my old English professor, Fred Flaug, who's no longer with us, but he made an interesting point, which is Scrooge is one of Western literature's great villains, except he's not the villain.
No.
Here's the hot take. Scrooge is not the villain, not because he gets better, but Dickens's real point is that he's co-opted by the system. The story is not the story of a curmudgeon who finds his heart. It's a guy who's honest, who gets sucked into the phoniness of the season. And here's his hook. Do you know what the word humbug means?
No.
People think it means, this is no good or whatever. It means bullshit. It's Victorian for phony. So when all these people are running around being nice to each other, if you really listen to what Scrooge is saying, he's like, humbug, phoniness, hypocrisy. You do this once a year so you can feel good about yourselves. And then you run around treating people like shit all year long. Goes, I don't pretend. I just do what's good for me all the time and I'm not pretending. And the ghosts visit him and it's like the ghosts are telling him, you better get in line. Now, what's interesting is that maybe Scrooge is going to transcend it and be Christmas all year long. We hope that that's the case.
That is in the epilogue that he holds Christmas close to his heart year round.
But the villains are just as much the phonies in the street as they are Scrooge himself.
You know what? I don't even look at it as a hot take. I look at it as a clever one. Because yes, Charles Dickens certainly did rage against just the elites and greed and all
People,
that kind of stuff.
yeah, because he thought that these people were phonies and they let people struggle and suffer when they had the means to fix it. And then they would come up with these little gestures that were intended to make them feel better, but really didn't accomplish anything except allow their loot to stay intact and to feel good about it.
It is interesting how that book, there's a movie, we enjoyed The Man Who Invented Christmas. It's a fictional retelling of how Charles Dickens wrote A Christmas Carol. But it's interesting how that book kind of really did kickstart Christmas as we know it. Traditions are always funny. And actually, we'll do a quick moment on sports here. Amin El-Hassan from the
ESPN.
Dan Le Batard show, used to be on ESPN now, on the Le Batard show, talks about how the Defensive Player of the Year award is like a big deal now. That started in the mid-80s. The NBA Cup is starting to grow. We made fun of it the first year, starting to grow, but 30, 40, 50 years from now, it might become a big deal because traditions take time. And at one point, Christmas, not that long ago, like 200 years ago, wasn't really a big deal. And then that book certainly played a part in making it what
Well,
it is
because it
today.
became the center of the economic calendar. That, the 80-20 rule in economics, that 20% of your stuff makes you 80% of your money. Everybody winds up in the black during this time. If your Christmas is bad, your year is bad. If your Christmas is good, your year is good. I talked to the bakers around the corner for me, and they're like, we make most of our money in 6 weeks because we have tons of parties. We've got stuff leaving the door all the time, right? And to your point, that's a modern invention, but it's an economic invention more than it is a cultural one. The war against Christmas, interestingly enough, isn't really fought on theological grounds. It should be fought on social economic ones, which is the why do we have this pressure to spend so much money on gifts or we're bad people when really you could accomplish the same goal of telling people you love them by telling people you love them.
Actually, I love how it is in our family because we're good at always telling each other we love each other. We
Us
don't,
too.
yeah, we don't buy each other as much. No, now we just find ways to all get together. Like the gift for like all my brothers, we're gonna go to a concert at the Kitavalla up in Muskoka. Like, okay, guys. You want to go see the beaches? You want to go see Sam Roberts? Whatever you want to do, we're going to do. Also, I do wonder. I always do wonder, and it's not dangerous political territory. The whole war on Christmas thing. How many people actually care about they don't want to hear the word Christmas? I imagine that number is very small. Because I don't know, the guys like, oh, everyone's against you. I'm like, I'm sure there really isn't that many people. I don't understand people who, well, we better not say Christmas. Even people who aren't religious. I think 99% of people who don't believe in Christmas, who aren't Christian, who have another faith or are atheists, I don't think they actually get offended when someone goes, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of BS there, and it sounds like it's a reason to pick a fight.
Yeah, and both sides on this are like, I think both sides try to amplify it to make it, like, To me, it's one of these issues I put in the file of really? Like, anyone cares about this?
Well, they do because they're being told that they should.
But
And
who tells them that they
well, the
should?
people in the pulpits tell them that they should. Like, there's a lot of people who get mobilized at this time of year. Like, the Christians are really funny. And here's, I'm going to talk about them like they're a separate group because in my mind, it's very complicated. But there's a sense that we are being picked on. But it's not that we are being picked on in the sense that we're not allowed to do what we want to do. It's like we're being picked on because we're no longer in charge. That's not exactly the same as being picked on, is it? That you
No.
don't get to run things anymore. You know, and so that's, I think, the essence of the war on Christmas is people have made it a fairly secular time of year where everybody gets to participate in the sense of goodwill. And, you know, you can say, well, don't call it Christmas. I mean, any more than I, you know, I don't go out and celebrate Hanukkah. You know, like I'm not Jewish. But it's not like I feel like I get the concept behind it though. And so to your point, it's a thing because it's been mobilized to be a thing. It's a creating an us versus them
And
mentality.
that's like, I hate that. And
I hate
also,
that too.
yeah, it's also like the people go, well, you know, we really shouldn't say Christmas. No, just go say Christmas because it's not hurting anyone. And for someone says, well, I don't celebrate Christmas. Well, great. You're going to have an easier drive. The traffic is much lighter.
Okay, so let's put a pin in that because I've got my top five favorite things about Jesus I want to do. But I
That's
still want to
right.
talk about Christmas movies just a bit more because I have a question for you.
Yeah, I was trying to, by the way, I tried to do a top five for all of them, but because I'm not religious, for my top five about Jesus, I literally just wrote water into wine, and I had not done any other
That's
ones.
funny. Well, you got stuck on that one because that was worth five. That was. Trading Places. It takes place at Christmas time, but I don't think it can be a traditional Christmas movie because of Jamie Lee Curtis's nudity. Can you
That's a
really,
great point.
you know, like there's just something about it. It feels a little sexy to be a Christmas movie.
Wait, was Jamie Lee Curtis nude in the?
Yeah,
And I don't
well,
remember.
just randomly
I don't
at
remember when he.
36 minutes, 30,
Yeah,
37 seconds
I. Yeah,
into the
let me.
film.
Yeah, I don't remember when he opened the door in the bathroom and everyone saw her boobies.
Her character was Ophelia. That was her name.
His name was Ophelia?
Yeah.
Oh man, I feel we could go down the Shakespearean, but no, fuck that. We'll just
Honestly,
stay with
Trading
the.
Places is so good.
It is so good.
John Landis at his comic peak, Eddie Murphy with the kind of energy of his new stardom.
He's like 20. He's like
So young.
20 at the time.
And Dan Aykroyd, who's just like a brilliant glue guy. The Dukes, who are like great villains. They're like the Muppet guys, the old guys from the Muppets, right?
It is such a good movie. And yes, it doesn't feel as
It's not
Christmassy.
Christmassy just
One, because of Areola, and two, Christmas is not as central to, like, say it is with Die Hard, where the whole movie's a
And
Christmas
there's
movie.
boobies in Die Hard, not to speak
There is,
generically,
but it,
but it's
that.
different. And it's also, that's not a Christmas movie. That's a Christmas movie by default.
Well, yeah, Die Hard's a Christmas movie. Also, I don't want to get into a whole of the booby thing, but that one, it was somebody being rushed out of a room. It was not happy nudity. It was scared nudity.
That's true. That is true. And it certainly wasn't sexy. And then It's a Wonderful Life, we can just all agree, it's the best.
It's the best.
It's freaking dark.
Oh, it is.
It is so dark.
And you hear about how Jimmy Stewart at one point wasn't sure if he was going to do it. That was one of his first movies after coming back
After coming back from the war.
from the Second World War, and some of the scenes when he's at the bridge. And like he talked about how he was still dealing with PTSD, and a lot of that wasn't him acting. That was him just trying to readjust to life. It's yeah, I love that movie. We watch every year. I try to save it as the last Christmas movie to watch. I will absolutely tear up at the end, no diggity doubt about it.
When I got my first real job at TSN, Merrick bought me a picture, had it framed. And it's the moment of Jimmy Stewart when Jimmy Stewart is getting the offer from Potter to switch over sides. And he's got the cigar and his eyes light up. And I think that was Jeff's way of saying, you're in it now, buddy. Don't let them buy you.
And he was in a smaller chair. Also, shout out to anyone should you should look this up if you haven't seen it and you're a fan of It's a Wonderful Life. SNL did such a great spoof on It's a Wonderful Life. But in this version, Jimmy Stewart finds out that Potter stole the money from his uncle, and they all go and kick the shit out of Potter.
Well, There's two things that really stand out to me.
Yeah.
One is Potter is such an awful curmudgeon, but a fantastic curmudgeon.
Yeah.
And he calls all the immigrants who live in their housing, their kind of like public housing, calls them garlic eaters.
Yes, that's right.
That? Like, what a fucking demeaning thing to say about all those people who just show up here, those garlic eaters. We still talk like that today. God, it's what a world. The other thing is, you know, the two guys, the cabbie and the buddy?
Bert and Ernie.
That's where Bert and Ernie comes from.
I don't know if it is. I read something, and because, you know, I this is the stuff I Google at night when not trying to find out Jamie Lee Curtis movie scenes, that the Muppet, or not the Muppet, excuse me, that Sesame Street said that that was a pure coincidence. I can't believe that. Yeah.
Shit.
I can't believe
yeah,
that is
right.
a
yeah,
pure
the two
coincidence.
Buddies,
yeah.
The comic relief guys, but no way.
Yeah.
Do you got a top five you want to do?
Yeah, let me pull it up right now. Well, no, do Jesus.
You want to do it here?
Yeah, do your top five things about Jesus.
Okay, so, and I should say, you know, I'm not being a cheeky guy here. I have a very curious relationship with this stuff. You know, I don't hide it, and I don't tout it either.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call me. But I do think the teachings of Jesus are very interesting. And whether you're religious or not, I think anybody who's teaching a message of universal peace would... You know, it's worth taking kind of seriously. Okay, number five, the original punk. Man, he had righteous anger. Throws over the tables in the temple. Not the rich people's favorite Jesus, but probably mine. Number four, interesting friends. You know, whether it was Mary Magdalene, who, you know, like Ophelia, came from the other side of the tracks from Trading Places. Never thought of the connection between those two, but here we are.
Here we are.
Lepers, drunks, miscreants. You know, he wasn't afraid to mix it up. You know, we talked about Mickey Rourke and Barfly the other day. He kind of had that hanging out with the crew from Barfly feel to him. Even the apostles, you know, interesting bag of cats. Number three, and this goes to you, Matt, good host.
Oh, yeah.
Wine, loaves of bread, fish. When he turns water into wine, there's something that's really smart there, is he starts with the good wine. But if you read it carefully, he actually makes worse wine later because everybody's already drunk.
What a smart fellow. That's my strategy as well.
I was going to say, so I was going to ask you,
yeah,
when you finish this list, what's the best second bottle of wine to serve at your dinner?
Right.
On New Year's Eve. But,
I love it.
Number two, and I mentioned this one before, universal love. Big fan of that.
Big fan.
And number one, Prince of Peace.
Mm-hmm.
2,000 years running, still a good thing to shoot for.
Absolutely. There's a reason why we celebrate his birthday. Good job, JC.
Yeah. You know, to quote Sloan about Consolidated, if you ever feel like all this stuff is just not for you, don't forget, sometimes it's okay. You know, it's not the band you hate, it's the fans.
Mm-hmm. Chianti?
Okay, so this is the second bottle of wine.
Yeah, the second or third bottle of wine, you know, depending on who's there. So what I like to go with are just inexpensive wines that are from good areas. So you can get quality, like, okay, but good areas that aren't as expensive. You're not going to open any Bordeaux or Burgundies. I find Chianti, I find Cote de Rhone. You can get some good Portuguese reds.
Okay.
These are wines that'll be.
I'm serving Portuguese fish at my table.
Again,
and it's kind
Chardonnay.
Of after the lobster.
Just
so.
Do Chardonnay the whole night. Just okay. You can do Chardonnay the whole night. So I would say those three: Cote de Rhone, Chianti, and Portuguese reds. You can find. Very well done expressions of those grapes in those regions for $15 to $17. So it's the perfect second wine.
Do you got a top five you want to do?
Yeah.
Because I actually wrote down top five things that are different about Italian Christmas than the Christmases I grew up with.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so I'm going to do my top five sports figures, non-athletes.
Oh, you want to do that here?
Or do you want to do a, are we doing a, do you want to do a third pod or?
Well, I was going to say, let's record only Christmas now.
Oh,
we'll come back
done.
To sports.
Done. Okay, so then real quick, my top five wines Oh, no, I already did this one last week to have at Christmas. Just a real, once again, for people out there, Henry Appellum Cuvée Catherine Brut is your sparkling, $27. Daubin Estate Riesling, a little more expensive, $60. The people that make this wine are freaks about Riesling. This Riesling will blow your ass off. I never talk enough about Prince Edward County. So Clos and Chase Pinot Noir, you can get a good bottle for $35, a very good bottle for $35. Then you want to splurge a little bit, Checkmate in Okanagan in the Osoyoos region. Their Merlot will actually, you know, pour that on Paul Giamatti and say, huh? You said no Merlot? No fucking Merlot? Try this Merlot. And then finally,
seems kind of angry.
Seems kind of, well, listen, I'm not the one drunk and talking to Paul Giamatti. That was you.
talking at Matt.
Talking at Matt, not with. And then Chateau de Charme, Vidal Ice Wine 2018 for dessert. And by the way, all five of these, most of them you can find at the LCBO.
And how many glasses of that dessert wine would it take to get me drunk based on what you saw me drink previously? Last episode,
you know, like a
half a glass,
a butterfly's wisp of a wing amount is all you would need.
All right. So growing up, I grew up in a house where I had first generation Ukrainian immigrant grandparents that we lived with them. They were on the first floor. My family lived up on the second floor. So Ukrainian Christmas was always January the 6th, Christmas Eve, right? It was a very specific thing and it had its own customs. As a result, the Christmas that we had on the day really wasn't like a festival day so much as it was just gift giving, and you know, the Ukrainian part of it tended to be more solemn and family oriented and all that. So when I married an Italian and I started doing Christmas up in Woodbridge, I learned not everybody does it the same way.
Okay.
Different places have different customs and different things to expect. It takes some time. So here's my top five things that make Italian Christmas different than everybody else's. You ready? Number five, the nomads like food for gifts, but you have to tell them you got a deal. We will buy my mother-in-law a big wheel of cheese, and she will enjoy it because she loves cheese, but she'll like it better if she thinks you got a good deal on it. So it's one of the rare times that you tell someone how much something costs, because that's part of the gift.
Have you ever lied and said it was cheaper than what
Every
it was?
Every time.
Every time. Okay.
Every single thing. You can't lie too much because she knows how much everything costs.
Yeah.
Right? So she would know what a good deal is.
If it was normally 40, you say, I got it for $33.95.
100%. Honestly, right there, that's half a wheel of cheese gone up 15, 20% in enjoyment.
Yeah.
Food. The opening table. There's an antipasto table that comes out before you actually sit down, and it is filled with beautiful, delicious things. And if you're not careful, you will be full before you sit down. This is the rookie mistake everyone makes. This is not the meal. You are not doing a la carte. You are not doing walk-up buffet. This is a trick to see if you have the stuff to last to the end.
It's so true. I remember first time Amy and I were in Italy. We went to this restaurant where they didn't have a menu. Mm-hmm. And they were just bringing us all these meat and cheeses and we were eating it. And then I look at another table and I see them being served some meats and pasta. And we like slap the food from Amy. I'm like, put it down. There's many dishes coming.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the other trick, because it's even sneakier than just the opening table. The next round is pasta. That's not the main.
No.
That's a warm-up pasta.
Mm-hmm.
That is just there to get you in the spirit for the meat and the vegetables that are coming. Do not be deceived by the pasta. Which brings me to point number three. No turkey or ham. I don't know if this is consistent across the board, and I'm sure some people have been anglicized enough that they do turkey. It was always just lasagna and sometimes a prime rib. And it was amazing to me how much it doesn't feel like Christmas unless there's a turkey.
Yeah. And yeah, prime rib and like all the different ones I go to, it bounces around all over the place. You never know.
Now, you're Northern Italian.
That's right.
People may not know this about you, but you definitely have that in your background.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's like for the Northern Italians, but my family comes from Southern Italy. And this brings us to number two. There are a lot of people there and it is loud. Matt, there are moments where it gets so loud, you think you are in an airplane hangar.
Is there one thing that people yell about the most?
What this? My family doesn't yell. We're not like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a arguing kind of family around the table. It's just not like that.
Right.
But everybody just gets really into it. And I remember I invited a friend of mine over and I said, look, this is what's going to happen. At some point, you're going to stand by yourself in a corner and you're going to be totally overwhelmed by the sound. Do not be afraid. This is normal and everyone experiences it. He comes up to me 3 hours later. He goes, it was exactly like you said. I know, I've been there. Which brings me to number one, man. Number one, Italian Christmas, it never ends. The meal never ends. And once the meal is over, it starts again. Like you sit at the table for 14 to 16 hours. It starts at 1 because you told everybody to be there at 10:30. It starts at 1 and it goes until Boxing Day. It never ends.
The hero in this mm-hmm. is always the poor bastard who tries to tell their partner, I think it's time to leave.
Yes.
And you never want to be the first to leave because
No, no,
you
Matt,
end up
you're the
being the
one step
villain.
forward. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
You can't be the first to leave.
Then who is? At
That's the
some
thing.
point, someone has to leave.
No. The only thing that you can leave for is if you say you're going to another place. And you don't want to lie like you did to Nona about the price. But sometimes you just have to. My brother-in-law, Julio, whom I love so much, we just went up north the other day. We did that fishing trip
That's
together.
right.
He is a goodbye specialist. If you want to leave at, like, say, midnight, he's got to start saying goodbye at 8:45.
Right.
Because he says goodbye to everybody, everybody. And it takes about 35 minutes. Every person gets a 35-minute goodbye. And it always, as he's saying, okay, I'll see you later. How are things? That's not the question that comes after, see you later.
I'm always the villain. And then there's not just Christmas thing, but like family thing with Amy, because she'll stay longer. I'm like, we gotta go. And I won't do the thing where I'm already in the car with the car idling.
Have you ever done
It's been ages since I've done
that?
it. It takes a hero to be a villain.
Matt, oh, you're right. You know what? It just occurred to me. Sometimes I just go and stand outside in my coat.
Yeah, that,
I
that's the
just
same
go and
thing.
stand outside and wait.
Well, Bob, you wouldn't know how to start a car and get it idling anyway.
If I could.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we will stop this one,
Yeah.
and then we're going to do another top five more sports related, because we are pre-taping these to be played over the holidays, and we will do that one because eventually I got to get up to work. I'm on air at 2 p.m.
Yeah, okay. So we'll zip through these. We got a couple top fives, but Matt, unlike an Italian Christmas dinner, this has to end.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.